Welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. Throughout history, new technologies have always driven changes to the battlefield and how warriors fight. Advancements in metal saw the creation of chainmail and armor, black powder extended the reach that you could hit your target, and flying meant you could see and hit your target and the enemy from above. And now, the modern battlefield is no different, with all the new and unique technology challenges for the warfighter to overcome. UAVs have made it so much harder now to hide from the enemy, and the long-range missile capabilities means that our rear areas are just as vulnerable as the forward line of troops. So, how do we overcome these new challenges that we are faced with? Well, we maximize survivability through dispersion with the use of base clusters. This increases our mobility, facilitates greater concealment, helps mitigate indirect fire, and may enable greater flexibility to position assets forward to extend operational reach. A lot of you out there have probably been experimenting with base clusters for some time now. I know I did when I was in Alaska all the way back in 2022. However, the Army has now officially published guidance on the use of base clusters in the new ATP 4-90 Brigade Support Battalion, published on 26 January 2026. If you've not already, I highly suggest checking out this new piece of doctrine to add to your new toolkit. The concepts we developed in ATP 4-90, which model how to increase survivability through dispersion, are not restricted to solely sustainment units. They can be applied to a wide range of units, which brings us to our conversation today on how aviation is looking to restructure their footprint based on the sustainment model. The individuals I have with me today from the Joint Multinational Readiness Center, JMRC, are Lieutenant Colonel Nick Frank and Captain Michael Linden to discuss how they are looking to adapt a similar sustainment concept for aviation. Lieutenant Colonel Frank is a native of Hawaii and was commissioned from the Virginia Military Institute as an aviation officer in 2007. He has served all over Germany, Hunter Army Airfield, and JMRC with deployment to Afghanistan. He is qualified on the Black Hawk, and he holds a master's degree from King's College London in Military Strategic Studies and currently serves as a senior aviation trainer at JMRC. So welcome to have you on the show today, sir.
Thanks, Garrett. I really appreciate it. You facilitated just a wonderful opportunity for us to be a part of this platform that you've created and essentially just to promote the Army's message. Also, thank you. You're letting aviation be a part of the sustainment podcast and the sustainment enterprise. You know, I hope from your introduction, what we're able to accomplish is one, promote aviation within the concept of support plan, but also really just try to get into the sustainment space. And what we're really trying to do is like adopt a similar framework to what you guys have been applying for the last year. So hopefully there's some crosstalk that exists. You can challenge our ideas and we can challenge your ideas, and I look forward to it. So thanks.
Of course, sir. That's what I'm real happy to have you on today. You know, just build that dialogue between the different branches. And that's what this episode is going to be about, is learning from each other. So how our two communities can come together to really come up with, you know, the best laid plan. And then my next guest is going to be Captain Linden, who is a native of San Antonio, Texas, and commissioned from the United States Military Academy as an infantry officer in 2016, with a Bachelor of Science degree in Defense and Strategic Studies. In 2019, he was accepted for a branch transfer to Army Aviation. He has served at Fort Riley, Fort Carson, and Germany, with deployments to Poland, Iraq, and Syria. He is qualified on the Apache and Lakota and is currently serving as an OCT on the Falcon team at JMRC Germany. Welcome, Mike.
Howdy, Garrett. Thanks for having us on here and allowing us to share some of our observations from JMRC to kind of help make the sustainment enterprise better. I'm excited to be here and have a good discussion. Thank you.
Of course. So I'm really thrilled to have you gentlemen on the show today. We were talking about just here is like, there's a lot of dialogue to get into. You know, it's the first time, you know, we're, you know, talking cross branches. You know, we started this podcast series with, you know, I talked to the armor branch on how to integrate combat arms and sustainment. So it's good to get back to that, just how different branches, you know, or overcome the various new challenges that we're faced with. But before we can even get into that, you know, what this core of this episode is about is, can you both kind of provide a quick overview of the integration of aviation and sustainment for the audience?
I think what's really interesting about what you just said is that you started off the podcast talking to Armor and getting that kind of combined arms solution to maneuver. Logistics is what helps maneuver. And we're a key enabler. Aviation is a key enabler in that. So by crosstalking, I think we in aviation are doing a much better job of understanding how the sustainment enterprise does the things that you're responsible for doing for the BSB. And then we have some things to learn from your approach or framework to the BSB, and some of the things that we're trying to challenge as new ideas as the ASB. The bottom line is, I think we are something that can really enable the ground force brigade commander's ability to maneuver. And I think by talking to you, engaging with you today, maybe there's a sustainer, a SPO, or an S4 who feels a little bit more comfortable talking about with aviation, and then vice versa. Like aviation feels a little bit more comfortable talking with the S4 team. So
I'll give it over to Mike real quick.
Yeah, no, I agree with all the comments, especially, I agree that starting out with some of the Armor branch is very important, because both sustainment and aviation were very customer centric organizations, where our whole purpose of existing is to essentially enable the infantry and the armor to close those final yards and win on the battlefield, which is kind of where I see aviation tying in to this integration with sustainment, because we can be part of a unit's sustainment plan. We both have to work together to enable that we get those ground maneuver forces across the finish line to victory.
Okay. So I know a lot of times in the same community, we hear aviation, we're just thinking our lift capabilities when it comes to maybe air assault. Is there more to that then? Should we be thinking more so outside of just, air assault operations then?
Yeah. Everybody thinks about, attack aviation, doing aerial attacks, movement to contacts, reconnaissance, air assaults. But we can also do aerial movements to move soldiers across the battlefield, not just in maneuver like an air assault, but to just reposition them to strengthen other areas, as well as moving supplies and equipment across the battlefield to rapidly sustain forces that are in a defense or even trying to sustain an offensive maneuver.
So another way when it comes to, looking at this picture with aviation and sustainment, I know that's in the sustainment community, we always hear of brigade support battalions, but I know there's also the aviation support battalion. I know some of our community might not have, really heard about that or know truly what that's all about. So can you tell us or walk us through, differences between an aviation support battalion and a brigade support battalion, how those two compare?
Yeah, absolutely. So both the aviation support battalion and the brigade support battalion are supposed to do the same thing, where they support sustainment for their brigade. However, some of the key differences between the ASB and the BSB is essentially the BSB, just to kind of start with the foundation, has very robust doctrine, not just in ATP 4-90, but essentially it kind of outlines how a BSB is supposed to be organized, how to do echelon sustainment throughout the brigade to the end user, and then even how to set up its own footprint. In that same doctrine, what exists for an aviation support battalion is not as robust. Although it outlines the organization and the structure, it doesn't go into nearly as much depth as it does for the BSB in terms of how an aviation support battalion is supposed to do echelon sustainment for a combat aviation brigade. With that, when you go into some of the organizational differences, the BSB, they have a field maintenance company that focuses on the brigade's ground equipment. And similarly to an aviation support battalion, we've got an aviation maintenance company that focuses on the brigade's aviation equipment. However, the aviation support battalion does not have its own field maintenance company that is supposed to support the combat aviation brigade. They are essentially outfitted to take care of the ASB's internal equipment along with HHC brigade, with no support for any of the other line battalions within the aviation brigade. The aviation, the brigade medical company BSB essentially can provide role two capability, whereas in aviation, it's kind of like a role one plus. And I think that's suitable despite the differences. And then one of the next biggest differences between the two units is the BSB has FSCs that are organic to them that they task organize across the brigade, which enables that BSB commander to rapidly reorganize sustainment across the brigade in accordance with ground force objectives and the brigade commander's priorities. However, due to the different nature of all the aircraft that we have in aviation, the FSCs are not organic to the ASB, and they're actually aligned to the flight battalions and tailored to the distinct features of that aircraft. So having like a rearmament capability in an Apache battalion, the fuelers within each unit are also tailored to give more fuelers to a general support aviation battalion and less fuelers to like an assault helicopter battalion and an attack battalion, just because they don't need as much fuel. So they don't all look exactly the same as it does in a BSB. But those are kind of, in a nutshell, some of the compare and contrast between an ASB and a BSB.
The fuel pour is actually something I was just thinking of, because when it comes to a BSB, it all depends on which type of, you know, brigade combat team you're supporting. You know, if you're in supporting with an armor, like, okay, fuel is going to be a main thing. So what you're saying is fuel can depend on which type of helicopter group you're supporting then?
The extent to how much fuel that each battalion has is dependent on the aircraft. So for a general support aviation battalion that has Chinooks and Blackhawks, I believe, unless it's changed, last I saw, the MTO was about 22 fuelers for their battalion, versus an assault helicopter battalion will have 12 fuelers and an attack battalion will have 8 fuelers. And again, it's just, that's how much fuel the Army thinks that each battalion needs based on the fuel consumption for each of the different aircraft.
And I know as we continue to talk about this, the rest of this conversation, a lot of this is going to come into play in the concept of base clusters because of the support that you all need within the ASB to be able to accomplish a mission. So as we continue on with this conversation, kind of highlighted this at the beginning, but really, why do aviations need to disperse if they want to survive, continue fighting in support of ground forces, you know, in future wars?
Yeah. So, you know, part of the birth of this idea that we came up with for echelon sustainment within within a combat aviation brigade came from an initial article that we wrote essentially about TAA dispersion to increase survivability. Because what we've been noticing here at JMRC is aviation units that come here, they tend to cluster everything together for ease of maintenance and sustainment and command and control, because it's easy to conduct maintenance on 8 helicopters that are aligned in a neat row with all of their fuelers, kind of in a motor pool formation that can easily kind of go throughout the line, top off different aircraft. I'm kind of painting the picture here that even though they may have dispersed within that TAA, they were still all together and easily targetable and identifiable. And it usually resulted in catastrophic losses to aircraft and sustainment equipment. So we wrote a paper essentially saying that we need to get away from each other because we're easy to find. We have huge helicopters, and we have to move around a lot in order to keep the enemy in their targeting cycle, constantly looking for us and kind of breaking that kill chain in order to stay relevant and to continue supporting the ground force. And so that's ultimately why we need to disperse.
Okay. So when it comes, when you're setting up these areas, then how much of an area like do you need? Like, I guess it kind of would be different by aircraft. Like, you're going to be restricted how you used to have this like hard surface area. Are you able to be more, you know, smaller areas to set up? I mean, I'm guessing it's different between like, you know, the Black Hawk or, you know, or the Apache, breaking down by aircraft. But like, if you're all in one giant area, is this like a large area, which we used to be doing like in the woods, or are you looking at like a whole airfield?
Gary, that's a really good question. I think that's probably a lot of what you guys are trying to figure out within the sustainment clusters. Bottom line is, if the future fight looks like something like the operational environment is an environment where things beyond the flat will always be sensed and they'll always be detected, then how do you and I, or how do ground forces or aviation or the BSB, how do we kind of confuse the enemy? And that was like the impetus behind Mike's paper. We have to adapt because right now the TAA is this massive structure that's going to emit all this energy. And just like you guys are, if I'm always going to show up on the H-piddle or the high-value target because my BSB is the thing that's going to sustain the ground force, then aviation is going to do the same thing. Because right now, aviation supports both the brigade and division, and we're capable of achieving effects that's going to help maneuver for the ground force and the division. So if I look and sound like I do right now in this current construct, then I should probably think about a couple of ways that I can defeat that sensing algorithm and look at dispersing and look at things maybe from a different lens to break up that pattern that most people are going to look at.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the days of, these giant forward operating bases are gone now. Like, we cannot operate like we did in years gone by. Because we are, especially when you're fighting large-scale combat operations, you're fighting a pure adversary. Like, they're going to have the same capabilities we do on a lot of different fronts. And having that giant footprint, it's just a glaring, easy target. So,
yeah, I agree 100%. And think like our enemy, if it looked like us and it could achieve the effects like we're doing, then of course that's what we're going to go after. So you're right on it. And what I love, I did listen to your last three CTC Trends episodes, and I think what's comforting is everybody is looking at a very similar problem set, and they're also trying to get after the dispersion and get after how best to reduce the signature but still provide the same capabilities. And that's going to be really difficult. Mike started talking about command and control, the ability to provide, essentially identifying and doing the math problem of what your high demand, low density MOSs and equipment are, because they're not going to be able to get in every single cluster that you have. And so you're accepting a ton of risk, or you're accepting acceptable risk in certain areas to provide, hopefully a capability, and hopefully you can disperse it enough and think about the math problem enough where that may or may not be able to be a redundant capability.
Yeah, I know we are still on the sustainment side, still can use the word experimenting with how to do these base clusters. And I know truly it's hard to say this is the one standard, because so much is going to dictate how that base cluster is going to be established. I can always go back to the old MET-TC way of looking at it, but it's true in a lot of ways, and it's going to be what the unit is. And as we continue our conversation today, like, what works for you on the aviation side, how you set it up is going to be vastly different on how sustainment sets it up. But then it's like, okay, maybe this armored brigade combat team sets it up this way, or an infantry brigade combat team sets it up a completely different way. And it's going to depend on your environment. Maybe one part of the battlefield needs more support than the other. But as you allude to, sorry, and it's where is the commander is going to assume risk at? Because there is really no perfect solution. It's going to be ever changing. So how would you all see how this base cluster concept can be implemented based on how you've seen so far how sustainment has done it?
Hey, great question. And I would just like to echo that you're absolutely right in terms of, before we kind of go into how this base cluster concept could be implemented, it absolutely does depend on where we are in the battlefield and where we are with regard to a war that we are fighting, because there may become a time where it is permissive to where we don't need to disperse as much. If we have air superiority or other advantages, this concept that we've designed here was kind of we thought about it from the perspective of we don't have air superiority. We are in a highly contested LSCO environment. And so with that, what we essentially did is our team came together and using some of our own personal experience as distribution platoon leaders and having experience working within like ground brigades, we were called, you know, the echelon sustainment model that's outlined in ATP 4-90. And so then we started thinking, why don't we do this in aviation? Because aviation doctrine currently only has a main command post and attack is what an aviation battalion is doctrinally supposed to have. And so that's where we started applying the framework for echelon sustainment to include, like, could we have a CTCP and an FTCP that we could incorporate into each battalion's support plan with the FTCP tied into the ASB? And then something that we're kind of further exploring and experimenting with is how do we tie the ASB into CAB sustainment? And what do we need to do to outfit the ASB to enable it to essentially support an aviation brigade across the battlefield? But the paper mostly focuses on having essentially company CPs where each company can operate organically with the aircraft that it is supposed to have to maintain itself through about 125-hour to 120-hour maintenance. So basically the first level of major maintenance for aircraft, while also having a forward support element tied to it so that way they can have a 2-point FARP or AFAR capability along with the ground contact team to essentially maintain their vehicles. And so you could spread out each company, you know, across 10 to 20 kilometers away from each other with an LRP somewhere in between that can then reach to the CTCP. And then the CTCP essentially becomes like a ground maintenance collection point where they can handle ground maintenance for the battalion. It'll be your administrative and logistical hub with the role one capabilities. It'll be run by the S4 and the Echo Company Commander, which is our forward support company. And it also essentially push that forward support to the company CPs and to the main command post. The main command post can see to from their location about 10 to 20 kilometers away. They will have the downed aircraft recovery team with the main command post that they can flex to each company CP if each company needs a higher level of maintenance. And then kind of at the tail end of the echelon sustainment tied in with the ASB for major aviation maintenance, you'd have the FTCP, which essentially would become like our aviation maintenance collection point, which is where we'd have our aviation maintenance company to handle all major aviation maintenance, 250-hour 250-hour to 240-hour inspections and above, along with the ground contact team to maintain their vehicles, and also another flight company aligned to it that can essentially ferry aircraft forward to the companies that are closer to the front lines and then bring aircraft back and also provide rear area security for everybody within this battalion framework. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what we outline in the paper.
Yeah, so yeah, what I'm excited about are people like Mike who are even looking at this construct or this framework design. I think the more that we can be informed by the BCT and then that concept of support plan, the better we might be able to, like you said, Met TC, how else can I shape what this cluster design is going to look like, with probably my priorities being, I don't want the enemy to know what I look like. And because I believe I assess that I'll probably be an HPIDL. And so therefore, based on this design, based on how I'm informed by the BCT, what would be the best way that I can kind of look? And I listened to a couple of your podcasts too, and some people were talking about predictive logistics. And I found that fascinating because I think soon, or what I hope happens soon, is you know, someone who has Mike's ideas, this is something that we can put into a computer, like do some machine learning, and it could give a suggestion on what we should look like to help out your Logstat, to help out your log pack, to inform your log sync. And, you know, I don't know if you would have any suggestions for us from your lens based on what you know about predictive logistics. Is could you potentially seeing that inform how we're all set up?
It's an interesting way to look at it, sir. And the reason I say it is just because, I mean, data is everywhere. You'll see we've had a lot of episodes when it comes to data, and I can definitely see how data can help, especially when you're putting into the system, predict, okay, where's going to be the best area to set up and how to maybe break it down. Especially because that's from the concept of predictive logistics. Like, we're really using that to forecast that demand forward, understand, hey, where does which unit is going to need which supply at what time, and then it gets into the concept of precision sustainment, making sure everything is the right time, right location, the right number of supplies, so we're not getting too much, which look at it the same way as base clusters. You don't want to have too much of something in one base cluster and not enough in the other. And that's like the million-dollar question as we're going through this concept right now of base clusters is, what do we need where? And at the ever-changing battlefield, and then it comes to the concept of, okay, we're dispersed, we've increased our survivability, but we lose a base cluster. Now we lost that. Now that we've lost that capability, then that can completely reduce maybe our ability to support another base cluster. Or in your case, because Mike, you're just talking about all these long hours when it comes to maintenance, aircraft maintenance. And that could really hinder your operations as well. But getting back to the question with using predictive logistics, I would suggest, you know, as you're collecting all your data out there, because it's going to be a lot, don't get lost in it. And we just need to work to continue to develop systems that can help us better understand it. Because that's one of the things that we can hinder us when it comes to data, is that we can get lost, completely lost, and become overburdened with it. It's like, what do I do with all this? So I hope that answers a little bit of your question, sir. I know that can get into a completely different conversation that we can go down. We can start going down rabbit holes.
My fault. I think maybe for a different conversation, but I also think that might be the best way to talk about in the future, you know, how aviation gets involved in the concept of support plan. But like you said, that might be a different conversation. So right now we could ask them, what should we look like in what certain scenarios? And you already hit it. Like the purpose of us doing this is so we increase survivability. And with that, we are going to have to accept risk. So on the BSB side, you said, I lose a cluster. On the aviation side, we have these low density MOSs, like an avionics shops sergeant. And more often than not, that person is like 3 to 4 deep. But perhaps there's more in an ASB. And so as we divide and cluster these formations, you know, that could be a really important capability that we don't have at this specific node, and that we will just have to accept risk on. Or our concept of support plan allows us to put those people in the right location to facilitate that sort of maintenance when it does come up. I think it's a good problem statement to sort of look into, because a very dense TAA is going to get very difficult in LISCO.
Yeah, I mean, definitely as we're talking about, you don't want to have everything in one location. But when it comes to the predictive side, I would look at it as, okay, we know, because we're talking through this, we're going to have this set of aircraft, you know, based out of this cluster. These are the capabilities we need there based on, hey, this is where we believe we're going to be utilizing these aircraft the most, either for lift capability or for attack capability. And I apologize if I mess up any of the aviation terminology between the two, but that's how I would be looking at, okay, where am I going to need that type of capability at the most? And where can I assume that risk? Cause you said, if you're only 3 or 4 deep on a specific MOS, that's even going to make it even more challenging, especially, okay, I need at least one at each base cluster, Or if you put them all at one, you lose that base cluster. Now you're completely lost that entire capability.
Yeah, exactly right.
So when it comes to this concept of base clusters, like, what are some of the benefits of dispersion in sustainment and maintenance that you have all, that you're envisioning right now?
So I talked a little bit about how sustainment plays into the problem, how ease of sustainment plays into the problem, where, you know, units want to stay co-located because it's easier to maintain and sustain everything. You've got face-to-face interactions. You don't have to go long distances and things of that nature. But that's part of the problem that we're trying to get away from. And what we're trying to figure out is how to essentially conduct echelon sustainment across the cab in each battalion. So some of the benefits, if one company were, let's say, to be attacked, kind of split your force across multiple different locations. So you would only lose a portion of your sustainment and maintenance capabilities as opposed to all of them in one attack, which prevents catastrophic damage to your unit's endurance. It also presents the enemy with multiple dilemmas, trying to target multiple nodes as opposed to just one location, which puts a strain on their intelligence gathering resources. It also will hopefully help us maintain the element of surprise by having organic sustainment and maintenance capability at each location to minimize movement of assets prior to a mission, creating a form of concealment and enabling survivability through protection. You know, part of the solution to this is, you know, aviation units kind of have to organize themselves in the way that we've outlined in the paper in garrison and in training in order to ensure that they've got the relationships and systems necessary to make decentralized maintenance and sustainment more commonplace across their formations. And then training in this manner will allow them to build the necessary foundation of mutual trust prior to executing the real world mission and enabling flyline companies with low density MOSs and necessary equipment to essentially enable company commanders to better support the ground force.
So you've talked about this paper, and I just want to give it out for the audience. You said, and I believe this is going to get published in the Aviation Journal.
Yeah, it'll be published in Aviation Digest in their spring issue, which should come out on or around May 15th. The title is Aviation Tactical Assembly Area Organization in the Next War.
Perfect. Just want to make sure to have a link in there in the show notes. So our audience there can be able to, you know, get their eyes on that paper for you. And I know as well, be on the Lion Departure website as well from that journal. But just be able to continue to share these ideas. And that's what I, when I go out and talk to a lot of my students or when I go out and have different, you know, engagements, is like, it's a big part of today's podcast episode is you want to be able to learn about what the different branches are doing, because we do not want to exist in a vacuum, especially for sustainers out there. If you're going to a branch and you're going to be supporting someone, like we talked about at the beginning, an aviation support battalion, it's going to be good to know what's new in that branch, you know, what's the new hot topics and how can you better support them. So it's always good to get out and read and listen to the different branches that are out there. And so we can have this cross communication on what we're doing today. So I know a lot of this has been driven by like what you're all seeing. Have you seen anything like this tested yet, like at JMRC?
So yeah, so we've been experimenting with this here at JMRC, some of these new concepts and ideas. So far, we've done two rotations where we've essentially had aviation task forces distributed across two or three nodes between the Hohenfels and Grafenwehr training areas. And so far, I will say it has been successful, and we're continuing to push further to go to three or potentially four locations across an aviation task force between Grafenwehr, Hohenfels, and even Ansbach. So replicating with real world distances where aviation units will have to test their sustainment and their maintenance capability and their ability to see to and synchronize all of their missions to support ground forces while they're fighting force on force in the box, but doing it from a location that is further away, having to stay tied in with that ground force to enable that they get those aviation assets to to converge at the right moment. And so far, we've been seeing it be a little bit more successful, and the unit is more survivable as a result. And we're excited to kind of continue testing this in the future. We'll be testing it our upcoming rotations for the rest of this year.
That's good to hear, because that's how we not only just update doctrine, but that's how we, you know, find more efficient ways to truly become more lethal, is, you know, commanders being able to enable their subordinates to test these different new ways. So really then, what is the way forward? You know, you talked about, you know, some upcoming rotations, you can be able to test this out, but really, what do you see as the way forward so that you all can have that survivability, you know, through dispersion?
Yeah, and I think it's just us continuing to challenge the space that is dispersion. We keep learning from the BSBs and seeing the lessons that you learned, and then after these rotations that we do together, seeing what will and will not work, and we're going to fail. But I think that's how you get better. That's how you see what sort of limitations you have or friction points you have with over-the-horizon communication, what friction points you have with the way your 9/7/8s or your fuel distribution is going to happen, or maybe even just tools and the way they're set up, where we put aircraft to maximize the concept of sustainment or the concept of support. You even talked about it, I mean, just 2 minutes ago, you said, well, this is great. Combined arms, dialect or dialogue. And then we need to continue to do the same. So as we figure out what the most important parts are or the key takeaways are to this paper, it's probably sharing those lessons learned after this with you again or with the other CTC rotations. And then as we communicate and engage with senior aviation leaders, you know, those spaces get more informed with the lessons that were learned. So that's kind of the way I see the way forward, continuing to engage in this space, looking for opportunities outside of just aviation. And that's, I don't mean just as in, like, I mean that as in, I think there are other people who would be equally as interested in how we are trying to survive through dispersion.
Yeah, exactly, sir. And I think that's, and you all are at the best place to be doing all this right now, being at a CTC. You know, as you mentioned before, you know, we had our mini series from talking with the different CTCs that are out there. And it's just a great opportunity for, and I know you guys are already doing it, but just, you know, working with the sustainment side, their sustainment team at GMRC, and just be able to say, okay, this is how we're doing it. You know, the aviation side is how sustainment's doing. And you have that great opportunity where you can just, you know, walk, I want to say walk across the hall, but metaphorically, you know, just saying, hey, walk over and be like, hey, let's, and compare those. And you're seeing all these different rotations come through and seeing how you can better coordinate your efforts. So that's, being at a CTC is a prime opportunity to continue to see how base clusters can truly be implemented across the different formations. So is there anything like we missed today that you wanted to highlight or talk about then?
Yeah, the only thing I want to say is if we're asking for maybe advice to the Army, is, or maybe we're not all as good at communicating as we think we are. And then sometimes we do make assumptions with certain ranks and certain positions. And so by reaching out to you, I've already learned a ton from your community. And probably the challenges to everybody is, one, don't make those assumptions, because you're probably going to miss out on an opportunity to teach somebody something from your lens that's going to make us all a little bit better. So take those assumptions, make them into facts, and then maybe we're in another position like this a year from now where we figured it all out, which, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen, but it will make us all a little bit better.
So then, what advice would you have for the sustainment community? And then Mike, I'll start with you.
So one of the things I would like to start with is a quote that I actually got from the commander of 4th Army, 4th Regiment Army Air Corps from the UK. He saw their unit during Sabre Junction 24, and they're going to come back out here at JMRC. But they actually did a really good job of essentially dispersing their operations while continuing to provide command and control, sustainment, and maintenance. But he essentially said, and this is in the paper, I'm increasingly convinced in aviation operations, working up to the core level, that our ability to sustain operations forward through enhanced FARPs, incorporating C2, maintenance, and sustainment is our center of gravity. It remains a wholly unacceptable reality that these force elements are the least invested in for training, equipment, and resources. Collectively, we must make this cultural shift quickly to protect our relevance on the battlefield. And I think that kind of highlights, very succinctly the importance of sustainment in operations. And so my advice to the community would be don't forget the importance that we have on the battlefield and how quickly operations can become desynced if we don't sustain and maintain the force appropriately. With that, though, one of the issues that he kind of identified is, and what I've noticed being a distro platoon leader myself, and then even seeing it in aviation, is the training, equipment, and resources that sustainers have, it typically is some of the least prioritized. And so I would say fighting for that relevance and ensuring that, we maximize the training that we have, taking care of our equipment, and then fighting for those resources, and then advocating to the people that we are sworn to protect, the infantry, the armor, the ground force that are going to be closing those final yards, to ensure that we get the support that we need to enable them to be successful.
Thank you, Mike, very much. Then, sir?
Yeah, I think Mike wrapped that up in a nice bow. Anything I add will lose value, but appreciate that quote, Mike.
It is all good, sir. And I just really want to thank you both for this conversation today. I mean, there's a lot more we can get into. I know even as we're talking, I had a lot more questions that's outside of the concept of today's focus of the episode on base clusters, especially when it comes to more the integration of sustainment and aviation. And just there's a lot of things we can go down, which I would love to be able to have future episodes on, because this would be great for both of our communities on how we can better support each other, how we can especially continue this dialogue when it comes to base clusters. So where can people find you at if they have any follow-up questions, not only just on the concept of aviation, but also on the base clusters then?
Yeah, so I'm on Global. Frank is with a CK and then a super German first name, Niklaus. That's where you can find me.
Yeah, and then this is Mike. You can find me on Global as well. I have a German last name, L-E-I. N-E-N, but I'm the only Michael B. Linen on Global. So that's where you can find me.
I just want to really thank you both for taking the time to meet with me today virtually and connecting across the globe to provide, our audience with an understanding of how we need to examine survivability through dispersion at so many different levels. And it's been a great dialogue today. I just excited for the future dialogues, but just once again, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Garrett. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having us on the podcast. It was awesome to sit here and, talk with the sustainment element. Like I've been saying this whole time, it's important that we integrate with each other and continue to train together because what would be tragic is, if we share all these ideas, but then we continue to operate in our own individual enterprises, we're both trying to achieve the same thing. We both have a common goal. And so finding a way that we can work together, integrate, and some of that, needs to be achieved through training, not just here at the CTC, everybody thinks of the CTC, but training at home station and seeing what we can do to get aviation and any support elements at home station incorporated into each other's training, I think is extremely important and valuable. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to sit here and talk to your enterprise. I look forward to seeing what comes of this in the future. Thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome and exactly very well spoken. I want to continue to provide opportunities for different branches. We can all come together, have that cross communication so that we can become even more lethal. And everyone out there, if you find today's episode interesting, so then be sure to check out the new ATP 4-90 to gain an even deeper understanding of the utilization of base clusters. And also the paper that we discussed today that's going to be publishing here shortly. Then reach out to the soldiers outside your branch, just like we did today, to compare how we can all learn and adapt from each other. That's how we're going to continue to be the most lethal fighting force out there. So if you have more questions when it comes to base clusters, you know, reach out to us. We want to be able to have that conversation. This is a new concept that we're kind of really developing through. So get out there, have these conversations, and test it out within your formations. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, sustainment leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you'd like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at the U.S. Army CASCOM page. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.